Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FN. Here with Linda Vanilla and a special guest today in the studio with me, my son. Yes, Booker Ervin Jr., the third. Booker is the son of the very famous musician Booker Ervin, whose music I will play for you on the break. But when Booker was 9 years old, I adopted Booker, and Booker and I have been with each other on and off since. He now lives in Hawaii, and he's with us here in the studio today. And Booker asked me and Linda Vanilla a very interesting question. He asked about people and how they get stuck in their beliefs. Asked me my perception about that. And I thought the question, even though I would offhandedly have one answer, I thought it deserved a little more research. And so today we're going to talk about beliefs. Beliefs that you have. Because beliefs are among the most primitive and central of our mental constructs. But very few people agree about how they're constructed or how they're construed. Yet, our beliefs are key components of our personalities, our sense of identity, and our expression of belief often define us to others. If I say what I believe in, if I say attitude towards you, you get a sense of who I am. Now, many of our reactions to others are based on our beliefs and our perception of their beliefs. See, so if I have one belief and I see that you have another belief, my reaction to you, if you're a policeman and I have an attitude against policemen, well, my belief against the policeman and your belief about doing what's right, the policeman, we're going to clash based on beliefs. It brings me back to when I was a younger man. I was working in Wall Street, and I remember I was working in Wall Street as a broker or a training broker, and it was during the time that the hard hats were throwing construction equipment down on the hippies who were walking in the streets against protesting the war. And they were protesting the war strongly, loudly. Now, here I was working in Wall Street, and I was on both sides of it. I mean, I wanted to be marching in the streets, but I was on my way to work. But what was happening is the hard hats, the people who worked in hard hats who were standing on top of the buildings, would throw down construction material on the people who were marching in protest. And it killed a few people. It killed a few people and or at least hurt them deeply. And so I went to the people I worked for, who are people at a firm called Van Alstyne Noel. They were good people. And I said to them, we've got to do something about this. This is crazy. It's almost like nobody's talking to anybody. And I got together two groups. One group was I got somebody representative of the people who are marching, and I got together some hard hats. And I remember my bosses, who were pretty decent guys, said, we'll have the meeting in the conference room. And there was this big conference room with this huge table. And I was there to pick the lunch. I picked the lunch. You know what I picked for lunch? I picked peanut butter sandwiches. Variations of peanut butter sandwiches, because I knew everybody would have those in common. And that worked. Peanut butter sandwiches, coffee, soda, and all the stuff around that. And they got together and they talked. And one of the things that we asked is, what are you so bent out of shape about? And that's the same thing they asked. Why are you protesting this war? And the answers came down to the following. It was all about beliefs. You see, the hippies believed the war was wrong. They were young. They were looking at it. They were challenging the beliefs of their own background, their own family, which was trust. You know, trust the government, trust the war. And, you know, they said, no, we don't trust with the Vietnam War. The hippies were saying, not the hippies, the hard hats were saying, no, you have to be wrong. We must trust our government. And this is for the first time the government was really being challenged. We have to trust the government, and not only the government, we have to trust all of the people of the war. And when I, on further exploration, what they wound up saying is, look, if I can't believe in something, what am I going to believe in? I believe in my government. If my government is waging war, as the hard hats would tell me, and I mean not just one, then what else could I trust? And on further investigation, they said, if I don't believe my government is okay, then what about my mother? What about my father? What about what they believe in? In effect, to challenge a belief system is to challenge your parents. And these are mom and apple pie guys. You know, they don't want to challenge the system. So their anger at the hippies for challenging the system was almost like they were defending their mothers and fathers. As so happens with so much of the stuck belief systems. Of course they stopped when they hurt each other. Of course it ended. It might have ended anyway. You know, everybody was just being somewhat stupid. Challenging the hard hats, yelling at them, calling them names, the hard hats throwing down bricks. Maybe it would have stopped anyway, but I'm glad that they got a chance to talk about it. So many of our reactions to others are based on our beliefs and our perceptions of their beliefs, and it's impossible to understand racism, prejudice, religious and national conflicts without considering disagreement in basic belief systems. We join groups because we believe the group will support our beliefs. We listen to WBAI because we believe WBAI will support our belief. Unless you're just listening for information and you're on the far right somewhere saying, maybe I'll catch them saying something. Our participation in groups sometimes alters what we believe in. Now there's perception of self. When you grew up, you were fed a belief about yourself. You were told you are great. You know, like, for example, they're now noticing that when you compliment a child, and if you compliment a child, they've learned that by complimenting a child for everything they do, by saying to a child, that's great, that's wonderful, that's fantastic, and the child smears something on a piece of paper, and he brings it to you and says, Mommy, look, and you go, oh, how beautiful, how wonderful, I'll hang it up here. We're learning that that's a mistake in child rearing. What you should do is congratulate the child for the very specific thing they're doing and not tell the child that they are wonderful at everything they do, because then later when they get challenged, it doesn't work so well. So one of the things that we would do is not only compliment a child, but sometimes you would say things to a child that makes them feel grandiose. You tell them how wonderful they are. And you'll see this. You'll see it on the old American Idol. You used to see people would appear who would believe they were singers. And they would believe they were great singers. Great. And so they would produce a piece of radio. And they would know, or they were in the basement, and their mothers would tell them, you're really wonderful, you're really great. But they sang off key, and when they would get on stage, it was terrible. I know another man who made a recording, and he was out of his profession, but his hobby was singing. And he made a recording that was, he hired a good track in the background, and he made a recording because everybody told him how wonderful his voice was because he sang at weddings. And when he would sing at a wedding, he was a wonderful guy, elderly, you know, 72 years old. He would sing at the weddings, and he would sing I Believe and things like that. And nobody would ever challenge his voice. Nobody would help him get better. Nobody would tell him this is what you need to do. So when he produced it, he produced not the perfect item, as he thinks he does, but since everybody tells him how perfect it is because nobody wants to offend him, he can't get to the point where he can find his improvements. Our political and our religious beliefs are central to many of us. Many of our behaviors are affected by what we believe. And on it goes. However, psychotherapy, you know, our idea and our belief in ourselves very often includes negative beliefs about ourselves. What are your negative beliefs about yourself? Do you believe you're worthwhile? Do you believe you're smart? Do you believe you're not smart? Do you believe that you're evil? Do you believe you're not good? Do you believe you're supposed to be good? What are the beliefs that were ingrained in you, many of which paralyze you now? Like, for example, it is wrong to get angry. Now, that's a very convenient belief for parents to hand down to children, because the one thing you want is you give a child a situation to which they're going to object. They're going to feel outraged. Like parents who are out of control, right? Now, the child feels this outrage, and what's the child going to do? What if they are going to scream? They scream, they're going to get belted over the head. They may get annihilated. They may get killed. So the child learns, I can't express my anger. So what I'm going to do is turn it against myself and criticize myself for getting angry. I'm going to say, oh, you shouldn't get angry in the first place. What's wrong with you? I'm going to say to myself, and my belief about myself is that I'm bad for getting angry. Those people usually come to us for help. Those are the people who are usually depressed. People who have a belief system that there's something about them that's bad and wrong, especially around their anger. Armand DeMille here with Linda Vanella, bringing you the positive mind. So psychotherapy is an effort to change or affirm our belief about ourselves and the things we hold dear, but so is love itself. Love is an attempt to change or affirm our beliefs in ourselves and the things we hold dear. Are you lovable? Are you decent? Questions. Many ways to approach our beliefs. One way is to focus on what's called problematic beliefs, sometimes called anomalous beliefs. Some people call them bizarre beliefs. Now, just as an example, let's focus on this for a minute. An anomalous belief could be ESP, extrasensory perception, right? You believe that you could tell what somebody else is thinking or feeling, or the paranormal, astrology, the reality of events that could not possibly have occurred. But then just as well, you could have a belief in medicine as being curative, or non-medicine as being curative. You know, if I put these things on my head and I blow smoke around me and I burn sage, I'm going to get better, is just as valid as if you take this medicine, it's going to work. But belief in either one is very hard. It's eventually you learn that there's only one way to believe, and it's to not have a strong belief one way or another. At the same time, we recognize that there are a few beliefs that seemed bizarre at one time, but become perfectly normal later, like being a vegetarian. Right? At one time, you would have heard being a vegetarian, oh, I never eat meat. Ooh, what a silly idea, you know? And then later, you say to yourself, hey, this is not a bad idea. I feel different. Not a bad idea. But then you also find out that there are the downsides to that. So you say, well, maybe I'll have a little chicken. You know, or something you throw in it. Now, one of the things that I found most interesting was when I asked a number of people the following question. What is a belief that you once had and you were convinced about that you no longer, that you believe is now wrong? Now, this shouldn't be as strong as, you know, once you were a member of the Ku Klux Klan, you know, and then you realize, oh, no, that's really no good. But what is a belief that you once had that you know now is wrong? Now, almost everybody I asked this question to came up with the same thing. It was a belief about people. I trusted someone I shouldn't have trusted. That's what they all have to say. They don't say, I believed or I believe we should never use the military, and then, oh, I turned around my mind, now I believe we should use the military. They don't say that. Most people's belief about other than people have kind of stayed the same the whole way. Can you tell me a belief that you changed? Can you think of something that you once believed, not about people now, that a belief that you changed? People hold these anomalous beliefs, which have to do with the esoteric beliefs, as we hold our the same way we hold the unproblematic beliefs. And they often turn the tables on us by suggesting, you know, if you have a belief in something that's not real, ESP, and then what you do is you turn around to the person who believes that there is no ESP, and you tell them that they're not in touch with reality, that reality is defined by you. And how many people define reality according to their belief system? So Booker's question became important. What happens? Why do you hold on to it after you realize that it's not right? After you realize that this is silly, why are you holding on to your belief? What changes it? Well, we go back to the hard hats. In a way, what you're saying is, I believe in something, and that something I believe in is the same thing that my parents believed in, and I have to protect my belief in myself and my parents by not challenging it in any way. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Beliefs are sometimes divided into core beliefs, which are the ones you're actively thinking about, and dispositional beliefs. Those are the ones that you ascribe to, but you never think about. For example, if I said to you, do airplanes fall from the sky? You would have a core belief, say, yeah, they sometimes fall from the sky. You know, sometimes airplanes have accidents. But if I said to you, do you think an airplane can fall from the sky right now as we're on the radio in the middle of New York? You'd have to think about it. And then you'd come up and you'd say, no, I don't think an airplane's going to fall down in the sky right now. So there are some beliefs that you have that you've never had to think about, and there are other beliefs that you have that you just automatically are aware of consciously. So belief can be understood as a state of mind in the process of increasing understanding. That's sometimes called deduction. You know, people try to deduce and come out with ideas. Let's talk about tobacco for a while. When I was growing up, everybody smoked. Smoking was cool. It was good. When you get to a certain age, 13, 14, 15, somewhere in there, you carry a pack of cigarettes in your sleeve. You roll up your sleeve of your T-shirts and it somehow fit in there. And that was just the coolest thing to do. And everybody smoked. Everybody smoked. There was smoke everywhere. What changed our mind about smoking? What did it take to change your mind? Well, some people still are stuck on that same core belief. Their core belief is, this is okay. It's not going to hurt me. I'm going to be fine with this. I refuse to believe anything else, even if the cigarette pack says, warning, this will kill you. It doesn't matter. Why do some people stay stuck in their belief? Well, two reasons. One is they are attached to believing in something because it does well for them. It makes them feel good. Mainly with tobacco, it has one primary purpose. It controls your anger. Yep. Every time you see a smoker who by now has not given up smoking, you'll know that's somebody who's got a rage sitting somewhere, and the only way they control it is through the cigarettes. Just think about what a cigarette does for you. It calms you down. That's the expression. You get angry, you get frustrated, you light a cigarette. I remember we used to do it at work. I remember we did it in psychotherapy sessions. I remember my therapist used to smoke. Because in our belief system, there was nothing wrong with this. That if you moderate your feelings, right, nothing wrong with it. Well, now we know. I mean, gee, my system about that is, my belief in that has changed completely. I'm sure yours has too. But then came sex. In the 70s and 80s, sex was such a terrific thing. Everybody should do it, right? Because we're free now. You have the pill. You have the birth control pill. You no longer have to worry about it. Sex is just terrific. Enjoy yourself. There's no reason to not do it. You go on a date, on the first date, if the person didn't want to have sex with you, you say, what's wrong with you? That was in the 70s and 80s, until AIDS came along. And then came the question, no, you know, if you have a belief system that, and it gets challenged, if you wanted to have sex all the time, and then suddenly somebody comes up and says, there's a danger involved, you know? You deny it. You say, no, it doesn't exist, as some people did. But that'll change your belief system. How long did it get you to change your belief system? Well, if you were somebody who was challenged by sex originally, you adapted the belief of the danger of AIDS immediately. You said, see what it could do for you immediately. You didn't even have to wait 5 minutes. You said, there's the danger I was telling you about. Because all through life, you're kind of warned as a kid that sex is dangerous. And then we had this period of time where you learned it isn't. And then somebody tells you it's dangerous again, but if you just are not embracing it, boy, you just jump on that bandwagon right away. Yes, see, it is dangerous. Or if you're a frightened kind of person and you're told people are not to be trusted. And so you go walking around all the time and your parents said to you, don't trust any strangers. I remember once I was in Haiti and my car broke down. And my car broke down. It was kind of in the middle of the night. And I'm driving, and there's nobody on the roads, and a truck comes by with six men in it, and they're carrying machetes. And here I am with a broken tire, you know? And I was so scared. I was very young. And they get out of the truck, and I just knew I was chopped meat. You know, I knew this is the end of this. And they walk over. They ask me what's wrong. I tell them I got a flat tire. They changed the tire for me. Literally picked up the car and changed the tire and went on their way, refusing anything from me. And I said, see, I was so scared. Number one, I was out in the middle of the night and I thought I shouldn't be doing it. Number two, I was vacationing on an island where people were not on vacation all the time. I felt guilty in some way. But this whole system of don't trust, don't believe got busted by that moment. What about you, my friends? What about you? Did you ever have a belief, a strong belief, that you changed? Now, a belief is usually defined as a conviction in the truth of a proposition. Beliefs can be acquired through your perception, through reasoning, through contemplation, through communication, but they're usually passed on down the families. Usually you get it from somebody else. What's right? What's wrong? What's good? What's bad? Religion. Now, religion, belief refers to a part of the wider spiritual or moral foundation of a group of people. Generally called faith. You have to believe something. And what we have here in the form of belief is it's generally a group's need to provide a functionally valid foundation to sustain them. So if I could develop in a religion a belief system that helps you keep our religion growing, right? And that's what we want to do. That becomes part of the belief system. So the Catholic Church for years said contraception is no good. Why'd they say that? Why was contraception no good if you're bringing families into the world who you can't afford to feed, babies starving, you know? Because it helped get more babies. See, so it had that. And it also had a rule against onanism, which was masturbating. That also was evil. Why? Because we wanted to make more babies. And almost every religion has a way of keeping itself growing by trying to keep things in a marriage, in a family. I mean, I wonder about the rule, honor thy father and thy mother, no matter what. It's a sin not to honor them. Well, why don't you challenge them sometimes, right? Because we've got to keep the family intact and we've got to keep you growing. Not just Catholicism. Every religion has these flaws. I mean flaws. I don't mean really flaws because they want it. It's their purpose to keep the religion going. Most of the rules of our society are to keep it going. The reason that there's a thing called crime and what we could consider crime is because we want people to stay within the confines of what we believe is right or wrong. So this is the end of my thesis. You know, sometimes they say that knowledge itself is a justified true belief, that the belief corresponds to reality, and it withstands arguments and challenge. It withstands it. But you know, if you ever met anybody who really believed in something a little wacky, if you challenge them at all, they're going to give you a very good argument about why what they believe is true. Like, if waving your arms as part of a religious belief keeps the purple elephants away, and you say, no, that's not true, how do you know that? And they could say, it's effective, isn't it? Because you don't see any purple elephants. 212-209-2900. In a moment, we're going to take a little break. I'm going to play you some music from Booker Irvin. I want you to hear Booker's dad play a piece, and you'll hear what I was listening to my younger days before Booker's dad got killed in an auto accident. No, I'm sorry. And then I met up with him after. I met up with Booker after that. Mainstream psychology, the simplest form of mental representation and therefore one of the building blocks of conscious thought, is based on your belief system, on your whatever your belief system is. And so it kind of has, now there's some new research in neuropsychology and neuroscience, that if the concept of belief is incoherent and ultimately undefensible, then any attempt to find an underlying neuronal process will support it will fail. So you could see through neuroscience that if you believe something that is not solid, the brain actually doesn't find a way to support it. And then we really feel bad. So what if you have a perception of yourself? And here's one, you know, if you grow up believing that you're a beautiful child, really, really beautiful, and you just think you're so spectacular, but you want to become an actress or something like that, or an actor, and then you go and people reject you. How do you handle rejection? People who are very sensitive to rejection have some unusual belief about themselves. They believe they deserve to be accepted by just about everything. So one of the challenges of our society is to say to you, well, you know, it's going to be based on whatever our needs are, not on your belief about yourself. So if you have some kind of exaggerated belief about yourself and about how wonderful you are, it is very likely that it's going to get challenged. And when it gets challenged, if you have an overreaction to it, it's because there's somebody back there telling you you're a beautiful young person and who should be embraced and loved by everybody, and it's just not true. You got to earn that kind of love. Okay. So we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends, and after which we will take your calls at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. I'm going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Bill Wood on bass, Ted Curzon on trumpet, I believe, but Booker Ervin on tenor. There's a lot to discover about Booker Ervin. He's just been rediscovered, and there's a whole group of people out there who are saying, wow, this guy could play. Armand DeMille with you here with The Positive Mind, with Linda Vanella, Booker Ervin Jr., in from Hawaii, where he lives all year long in 70 to 80 degree weather, swimming, scuba diving, silly things, not like the rest of us humans who have a better belief system, who are up here in New York smoking, breathing smog and struggling through our day-to-day. What's the matter with him? Linda, welcome to our program today.
Thank you, Armand. It's a pleasure to
Isn't
be here.
Isn't he nuts? Isn't he crazy? He's crazy to have that he wants to live in Hawaii, and he has a wife and kid.
He might be the one that has the better belief system than us. I don't know. What do you think, Booker?
Hey, let me ask you a question. All right. Come on, Booker. Sure. A couple of people asked. Here we go. What do you think? How do you like living in Hawaii? As a guy who grew up in Manhattan and grew up in New York.
Love it. It's very diverse, just the same as New York, so it's a lot of fun that way.
A lot of stuff going on there.
From different parts of the world, all joined into one place, just like New York.
Yeah. The only one bad thing about it.
No pizza.
Well, I was going to say that I miss you.
Yeah, all right. No, same here.
Wait, I'll take second to pizza.
Only from a New Yorker would you hear that.
Hey, 212-209-2900. Your calls about this, Linda, belief systems, right? All your life you've been looking at them, especially through religious beliefs that they kind of sent on you and they put through you, and now you see all these patients who have all these beliefs about themselves.
Sure, sure. And I love being in psychotherapy so that I could help people to better understand where those beliefs are coming from and make better choices, perhaps not have to hold on to or to confirm and affirm those belief systems that they have been exposed to. But yeah, belief systems are an incredibly strong and very impressive part of our life, that it's a wonderful ability to be able to become aware of them.
212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Mr. DeMille, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and call me Armand.
Armand, greetings. Yeah. This is Jeff.
Hello, Armand, Jeff.
How would you distinguish from amongst belief, faith, and knowledge?
Well, tell me what you mean. Imams, did you say?
I'm sorry?
Did you say, tell me what you just said. How would I believe
How would you distinguish the definition from among belief, faith, and knowledge?
Well, let me take that question to you, Jeff, because you've already thought this one through. Help me through it. What is the difference between the three?
I believe that, here we go, belief. There's a paradigmatic reality that is a consensus of the human experience, which we call knowledge, empirical knowledge, that which we can sense through the five senses, that which is generally indisputable, but certainly subject to review and reconsideration. The world of physics prior to quantum mechanics was a very different world. The world prior to Euclidean geometry was changed drastically by Euclid and ultimately by solid geometry. The concept of belief as being an understanding of some ultimate paradigmatic reality that is a perception that is individual, versus faith, which is that which transcends what we perceive as reality and takes us to a much higher place of commitment to ascension beyond knowledge, beyond belief. And I think that...
So where do you think, Jeff, you did a terrific job. I mean, if I had thank you for me not having to answer it. But let me ask you something. Where do people get in trouble? You think they get in trouble with their beliefs, their faith, or their knowledge?
I think we tend to get in a lot more trouble with what we perceive to be our knowledge. Knowledge does not imply doubt. Belief, by definition, implies doubt. For example, I know that I'm having a conversation with you right at this moment, but I believe that I left a tissue box on the kitchen table adjacent to a glass, or perhaps it might be on the other side. So belief implies overcoming doubt.
Okay, but do you have faith that it's going to be okay?
Ultimately, absolutely.
Even if it does spill?
That's right. Even if that glass does spill, absolutely, positively.
And how does that become knowledge?
It doesn't. I think personally that we in our world have basically transposed what traditionally within and amongst philosophers, be they neo-Aristotelian philosophers, be they existential philosophers, whether we are talking about...
Oh, wait, it's got to be a little briefer than that.
All right. I think that the essence of our consensus is that knowledge is the ultimate ascension to commitment.
Okay, maybe so. And you're saying that faith could be, you know, an interesting thing about knowledge that I understood one day, which is I always saw that trying to learn about myself took me up to a precipice. You know, there was a little spot where my mind wouldn't want to go. And there I would stand at the edge of this precipice and say to myself, can I push my mind even though I feel like I'm going to lose something by challenging my beliefs? But then as I saw myself standing there, I once did a drawing of it, and I did a drawing of me standing at an edge. And I said to myself, here, so what I've got to do is I've got to know where I'm standing right now. And then I said, oh, I'm on a ledge. And I have to know my ledge. And I put those two words together, and it became knowledge. Knowing your ledge. Hey, thanks for calling in, Jeff.
Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. I often listen to you, actually, and I really enjoy listening.
I hope today's one of those days.
No. and really, it's just something I want to share, and then I can listen off air.
Oh, but why don't you stay with me while you share it?
Well, I could. I have a small child, so I'm kind of driving around in a circle on a side street. So.
Well, why don't you park the car on a side street so that we could...
Okay.
Yeah, come on, pull in with me. Let's make this a little more... real.
I just often hear you.
What's your name, by the way?
My name is Bonnie.
Bonnie, hi. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for stopping. How old is your child?
He's 14 months.
He's 14 months. Is he beautiful?
He's wonderful.
He's wonderful. Yeah. Okay. Now, if you would, just as you talk, talk a little louder so we can hear you better. Okay,
sure.
Bonnie?
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yes, better.
Okay. I'm actually... because I listen to you often, and I really enjoy your programming. But often I hear an undercurrent of sort of anti-Catholic statements, and I think it personally, just I am a Catholic, and I know NPR is not really pro-Catholic, but I think there's a lot misunderstood about our belief system, and we've really been, you know, dogged by the media in ways, and also people who've grown up without the full understanding of it.
Wait, you can't imagine.
I was born post-Vatican II, so of course my experience...
Wait, Bonnie, in nomine Patri et Spiritu et Filii de Sante, I am absolutely in my fault, through my fault. I was brought up in the church.
Well, I think a lot of what you just conveyed to the listeners was really inaccurate in terms of today's current belief system.
Bonnie, which I want to talk to you about, the part that I disagree with so much is not the religion. It's the way the religion is used by people who want power.
Well,
now, there was people...
What's lost is that there's real people here, real people who are operating out of love and who do not believe all these things that you just said were sins and horrible, evil things. And unfortunately, I hope for your sake that...
Uh-huh.
Just suspend some judgment because someone like me, I'm in my late 30s, and I walk this earth and with a lot of love in my heart, and I experience prejudice every single day for who I am, and it hurts.
Why? Why do you experience prejudice for who you are? Why?
And I know that your listeners are all, you know, hearing this, and I'm sure there's a lot of rage and anger.
People will love you. But Bonnie, why would you experience prejudice every day?
Well, I think if I felt that I was really being hurt, I'd probably, you know, share more. But I just wanted to share that, and I'm going to let it go.
I just want to ask that one little question. Why do you believe that people feel prejudice against you every day? I didn't get the answer to that.
Well, I live in New York.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's not a good place for a Catholic to be, you know.
Wow, I understand. Well, Bonnie, what's your child's name? No, we couldn't get to that part yet. I understood. All right. Well, it's not a good place for a Catholic to be if you're an outspoken Catholic. But I doubt if people feel prejudice against you. And certainly my prejudice is not against Catholicism. My prejudice is against the way the power is used and misused around the church, as it is around all formal religions. I guess I'm going to hear from the formal religions. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, but then maybe they'll change my mind. You know? And then I'll just have to change my mind. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Yes, good afternoon, Armand. This is Mike from Queens. How are you today?
Hi, Mike. Good.
Good. I have a question to you as relates to, I know you listen to you quite often, and you always mention smoking and anger issues.
Yeah.
Okay, I was you know, diagnosed with lung cancer over a year ago, and that's definitely related to, you know, my smoking habit. And I still have issues, you know, I'm still smoking to this day, and as relates also to, like, people's belief systems, I know it's, like, totally irrational, so I just wanted to get your take.
Well, let's stop for a minute here, Mike. Let me ask you a question.
Sure, thanks.
You have lung cancer, right? And you're being treated for that?
Yes.
And what's your prognosis? What do they say?
It was very good. You know, like, you know, they caught it early. Now I have to go back just for PET scans now to make sure that there's nothing else, you know, floating around in the system.
Okay, so explain to me, Mike. Explain to me, and I don't mean you to defend yourself. Tell me what it feels like about smoking and giving up smoking. What it is to you? Is it just that you're caught and you can't get out of it? But truthfully, can you say to me, I don't want to stop smoking? Can you say that? I mean, is that what you feel? I'll believe you either way.
You know what? To be honest with you,
yeah,
I don't know. I stopped smoking for a period of 5 years at one time.
Uh-huh.
And then I picked the habit back up again.
You say, well, you picked, like, the habit, you picked up the cigarettes once again?
Yes.
And now, let me ask you, tell me one of the most enjoyable moments you have when you could have a cigarette. This is something nobody would talk about nowadays because everybody's always bad-mouthing it.
Okay.
What do you look forward to? When do you have a cigarette that's something you really look forward to?
Sometimes after my wife and I have an intimate moment.
After sex cigarette.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Sometimes after a meal.
After a meal, it just puts a punctuation mark at the end of something. It says, shift your metabolism. You make love, you've been panting like crazy, your metabolism is all the way up there, your heart's racing, you smoke a cigarette, everything kind of gets down to normal. You eat a meal, you feel yourself digesting, the cigarette helps you kind of make this break into a new metabolism. That's kind of what you're looking for. You're looking for a metabolic change. And you're using the cigarette as a way to do it. I don't know of another way to do it. I wish you would stop smoking, but I want you to understand. I want you to understand that what you're doing, looking to do, is to change your metabolism. Now, there may be other ways to do it. Maybe, but look for the metabolic changes, not just the inhibitory ones, because maybe what you got to do is squeeze each other to death after you make love. You know what I mean? Hold on as tight as you can, and then relax. Maybe that'll work. Maybe
okay,
after.
Can I ask you one more?
Sure.
I know that you have a lot of people trying to call you up.
Yeah, but you're as important as everybody.
Okay, but just one other question. Now, you also mentioned anger issues related,
yes,
as related to this smoking. I've heard you say that several times. I listen to you all the time.
Yeah, so how about you and anger? How are you with anger?
I tend to stuff it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not a pleasant or a peaceful feeling for me.
So
I'd rather not, you know, I disassociate myself from that kind of a feeling. It's very unpleasant and very uncomfortable for me to experience.
So something for you that would be very interesting, Mike, would be something involved in a form of aggression, which could either be studying some kind of martial art or something like that, that includes an aggression in it, that would help you feel that you could express that aggression without necessarily getting mad at people and dealing with the consequences. That might be of real help to you. Even a punching bag, you know, would work.
I'll try it.
Okay, Mike, thanks a lot. Keep me posted, would you?
God bless you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. So I was thinking about what you were talking about with beliefs. What's more real?
Yes.
A belief or the truth? Or the facts, I don't know what to say. And I was thinking about how when I was a child, I thought I had a happy family. And I realized when I was a young adult that no one was really happy in my family. Mm. It wasn't a happy family. And how I had to adjust to that. The belief was stronger than the reality.
Did you separate from them as a result of that?
No, I understood something about my experience with them. It was more about accepting what was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what do you think, as you accept what was, what do you realize was the biggest damage done by your distorted belief that they were a happy family?
I think that there was no place for us to actually talk about what was going on.
Yeah, no place to talk about feelings, no place to talk about hurt, no place to talk about anger.
Right, because there was no room to even acknowledge what was going on. We went forward as a happy family. I never questioned that.
What's your name? Your name?
Lisa.
But Lisa, listen now. You somehow grew past that. I hear you challenged it. I hear you looked inside with either by yourself or with the help of others, and you looked backward and you said, no wonder I have this distorted relationship mm-hmm. with intimacy, you know? And I'm sure you've had some problems loving.
Yes. And also,
that's where it'll appear the most.
Right. Separating out who I believe someone to be and who they actually are.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing that we do. Because, you know, one of the things that serve us is to have a belief that serves us either chemically or romantically or in a fantasy. We make up things.
Right.
We make up things and then we say, oh, what was I thinking?
Yeah. No, and I think that when you're a child, you have to make things up to be okay if they aren't okay.
That's interesting.
And hopefully someone helps you with that eventually.
Well, you seem to have grown quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. I'm very happy to. I've worked a lot on all of this stuff, and I love listening to you. And when I heard you talking about this, I have been thinking about this a lot lately.
Lisa, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday when I'll next be on air. Going to be talking about depersonalization, a very, very interesting subject with a lot of people are touched by. So I will be leaving you now. You can get a copy of today's program or you could re-listen to it on WBAI.org or on thepositivemind.com. Be back with you on Tuesday, my friends. Here's a little more Booker Irvin. Thank you.